There's a gentleman who lives in our neighborhood who appears to have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. He shuffles his feet about 2 or 3 inches at a time, and it takes him forever to cross the street, and the cars have to wait. It seems like it's important to him that one foot does not go beyond the front of the other foot. So he shuffles along like this. He's actually everywhere. You might have seen him. I saw him near Glendale City College recently. And he walks. It takes him forever to walk, but that's what he does. And whenever I see him, I feel some sort of sympathy because I have a set of my own obsessive compulsive behavior. I've told you about my germ phobia, claustrophobia. I don't do well in planes or closets or public bathrooms. I was talking to someone about germs on Monday. This guy was telling me that he has a friend who eats chips and bread all around except for the part he's touching. So if you go out to eat with him, he will have a bunch of discarded pieces of chips. When asked why he does that, he said, "Do you realize how many germs are on your fingers?" I sympathize with him. It's true, I concur. To an average person, some of my public bathroom rituals may seem ridiculous because I put the toilet paper down in front of the toilet before I stand on it and under my shoes. And of course, I never touch anything with bare hands. I flush with my feet. And it may seem ridiculous, I know. And I do realize that much of my behavior is nonsense. I mean, I know that even if I touch the public toilet, I probably won't catch a disease. I realize that it's nonsense. You know, even the person who gets drunk and kneels on the urine-infested floor and hugs the toilet as he's vomiting into it. You like that image? People do this. I haven't done it. He probably won't catch a disease. He'll just pass out in front of the toilet and wake up in the morning and he'll be fine. I know that it's nonsense to be afraid of germs like that. Now, you know, most of us laugh about the OCD behavior as being quirky or idiosyncratic, but for some people, it's so severe that it is not a laughing matter. For some people, if the picture frames are not completely parallel to the ceiling lines, the world will come to an end and the devil will win. It's serious business. It's nonsense, yes, but to them, it's not nonsense at all. They really believe it's important that every picture frame is parallel. When somebody was visiting my house, he went around correcting all the picture frames, and I said, "They are perfectly parallel, thank you. I have what you have, and there's no need to do that." You may not shuffle your feet 3 inches at a time, but I wonder if you still have some things, some nonsense that you're engaged in. You know, and sometimes you might even think that your nonsense is very crucial in life. Today I want us to think about all the nonsense in our lives, the nonsense that is so dear to us, nonsense we love, nonsense that has become more important than it deserves, nonsense that sometimes takes over our lives. Today we are going to look at a gospel passage where a group of people presents something that I believe is nonsense to Jesus. And these people were, Luke 20 is where we're looking at today. These people were experts at nonsense. They were good at majoring in minors, and they didn't like how Jesus seemed to ignore their nonsense, which was no nonsense at all to them. Luke 20, starting with verse 27, I appreciate how the children's storyteller tried to stick with the passage for today. You know, we tell them like Monday or Tuesday what the passage is for that day, and they try their best to talk to the children about the passage, and this was very difficult, and so I really appreciate what Wendell tried to do. It was very good. Some of the Sadducees who say there is no resurrection came to Jesus with a question. Teacher, they said, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves a wife but no children, the man must marry the widow and raise up offspring for his brother. Now, there were seven brothers. The first one married a woman and died childless. The second and the third married her, and in the same way, the seven died, leaving no children. Finally, the woman died too. Now then, at the resurrection, whose wife will she be, since the seven were married to her? Now, there is nonsense here on a couple of levels. First, did the Sadducees believe in the resurrection? No, it says they did not believe it. So, to ask about the details of how the resurrection works when you don't believe it yourself is disingenuous at best. They were not interested in knowing more about the resurrection. They wanted to trap Jesus with an unanswerable question. Now, that is not just nonsense. I think it's evil. If you ever find yourself trying to corner somebody or trap them into feeling that they are wrong or stupid, I hope that you can realize how evil you are. If you are hurting someone by trying to prove a point about some nonsensical idea that you have, you are not only sinning by hurting them, you are doing it needlessly. Another level of nonsense here in this passage is that even if the Sadducees did believe in the resurrection and were genuine about how it worked, the truth about the subject is not very significant. How many angels can dance on a head of a pin? As silly as this question sounds to us, it wasn't so silly to some experts of angelology of the Middle Ages. Yes, there are books written on angels, and how many of them could dance on a pin? To some, marriage in heaven may be an important subject. I guess it is a dilemma. If you had seven husbands, whose wife will you be in heaven? Assuming that more than one husband makes it. Or any. But even if this is a conundrum, the reality is, who cares? Do you think that anything is beyond God to solve? God, who is able to find a way to save a fallen planet, is there anything impossible for God? Some are concerned that about how every eye will see the second coming, since Earth is round. Yeah, there are people actually concerned about this. Will God make the earth flat for just a moment so that every eye will see him? I went to a mega church, and the main church was packed, so they sent me to a building next door, and I saw the preacher through a projected image, video image, and that's how I worshiped. Not a live person. It's simulcast. We used to do that here. And the young adults used to watch me preach through the screen, and I heard that they really were not listening, and so we quit doing that. But is that what's going to happen when Jesus comes? There will be a video projected image of Jesus coming on the other side of the planet, because, you know, physically, it's not possible that every person, every eye will see Jesus. And there are people really concerned about things like this. And we laugh, we may laugh. But are you sure that what you're concerned about is not nonsense either? Also, humans are so busy with nonsense. There are people that are concerned that Jesus is portrayed as a white man in paintings. This is a photograph of the picture hanging in your living room. They claim that Jesus is not Caucasian. Some believe Jesus is black. But we all know neither is true. Jesus is Korean. Have you heard the creation joke, Asian style? So God forms Adam and Eve out of clay and puts them in the oven. And when the bell rings, he takes them out, undercooked, all white and pasty. He says, okay, I have to put the timer a little bit longer. Forms them again, puts them in the oven, takes them out, overcooked this time, came out black. And the third time, perfect, perfectly yellow. Right. Who cares if Jesus is white or black? Really? This is what you're concerned about? How much of our discussions is nonsense, you think? How much of the truth we profess is nonsense, you think? We believe that our part of the truth is so important that we will break away from the church and form our own church. And in doing so, do you know how many Protestant denominations there are in the world? I've asked you this before. Let's see if you remember. Guess. 2,000. No. Another guess. Huh? More than 1,000, yes. More than 2,000. Try 30,000. Different Protestant denominations in the world, all professing to have the meaning of life. This is what's really important. We have to know how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. There's a denomination that handles poisonous snakes, and that's very important to them. We won't try that here. I don't know how they do it exactly, but they pass the poisonous snakes around in the pews, and whoever gets bitten is the sinner. I don't know. Because in Mark, it says that you will handle them, and they will not harm you. What kind of nonsense are you involved with in your life? The teachers of the law were very upset with Jesus, because he and his disciples were not washing their hands before eating sometimes. And to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, washing of the hands was not just for personal hygiene. There was spiritual significance to it. Well, apparently, Jesus did not share their value. Just because you think something has spiritual significance does not mean that it does. You know, there are athletes that wear the same socks or same underwear to every game. never washed. You've heard of this, right? Because they place some sort of a spiritual significance to it. It's their lucky socks. And, I mean, God forbid that they will lose them or their spouse will wash them. Honey, where's my lucky socks? They were so smelly, I had to wash them. What? I am doomed. My lucky socks, I will never win a game again. Some people find Jesus in the strangest places. They see Jesus in food. You see Jesus there? This fish stick is now spiritual. It's a banana peel. Yep, that's Jesus. You see Jesus there? In the pizza? I don't know what kind of pizza that is. It doesn't look good. Naan. Yeah, Jesus in India. Wow. Now that's not a good picture there. You see Jesus there? In the burrito? Yeah. People go crazy when they see Jesus in food. That's a pierogi, I think. Cheeto. It's Jesus. I guess nonsense could be harmless, you know? It's no big deal. Whatever floats your boat, I guess. As long as you don't hurt people with it. You know, I played Candy Crush. I got hooked on it when I was watching this 4-year-old girl play. And she said, "This is so fun." I said, "Really? Okay, let me try. Let me download it on my phone." And I've been playing ever since. I'm on level 201. And I haven't spent a dime. Yes, I'm that cheap. Complete waste of time. It's total nonsense. Although I'd like to say it's good for my brain to play it. Yeah, yeah. Right. My boy said to me, "Daddy, you know why I love mommy more than you?" I said, "Why?" "Because she doesn't play Candy Crush when she watches us." I mean, I guess it's okay for me to play Candy Crush as long as I'm not neglecting my children because of it, as long as I'm not hurting people, as long as I'm wasting my time when I should be doing something else. Nonsense is fine. As long as you don't torture people to believe like you. How much of life is nonsense? How much? How much of what we believe is nonsense? According to Ecclesiastes, everything is nonsense. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I said to myself, "Look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge." Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. Everything is meaningless. It's all nonsense, this guy says. Even wisdom and knowledge? Yes. Even wisdom and knowledge is nonsense as long as it stays that. Knowledge is meaningless unless it transforms you, unless it helps you to act out the will of God. To believe, just to believe, is never enough. That belief has to come out in the way you live. That's what the Bible keeps trying to say. And the Bible actually says, you know what? Forget the belief. Let's bypass that. Even if you don't believe, even if you're like a child and you don't know what you believe, but you live it, then you're good to go. And unless you become like them, unless you become like little children, Jesus says. you have little chance. As important as it is to us at that moment, whatever we're passionate about, whatever we believe to be the vital truth about God could be nonsense, and it probably is nonsense, because when all is said and done, there's only a couple of things that will remain. There aren't too many eternal things in this life. Let me get to the main idea for today. If you observe the life and the teachings of Christ carefully, you will notice again and again how profoundly simple his ideas are. He doesn't seem to be interested in theology and doctrines as the Pharisees and the Sadducees are. He doesn't give affirmation to those who focus on learning and knowledge. Rather, he praises the uneducated one who shows simple decency. And these people, these simple people, don't even realize what they're doing. Lord, when did we do that? When did we do such things to you? I think that children naturally live the truth of God because they know how to differentiate. They naturally know how to differentiate what is really important from all the nonsense. They can sense it. And little children will not trade a moment of time, for instance, with their parents for a mansion. One time I was doing children's story, and I asked them, do you want a lollipop now or $1 million tomorrow? And they answered, lollipop now. They kind of live in the now. If they say, do you want to go to the Dodgers game with your dad today? Or do you want a free house? Like, what? What's a free house? Who wants that? Dodgers game, of course. Fathers who work long hours to make a better life for their children may not realize what better life means for their children. I'm a living testimony to that fact. The fondest memory of my childhood is when my dad could not find work for years. And so he stayed at home, spent a lot of time with me. I was maybe 5 or 6. I wasn't in school yet. We had to move into a studio apartment, one-room apartment. And it was so small that the four of us in our family, when we were lying down to sleep, there was hardly any floor space left. That's how small it was. And my dad and I would frequently walk down the streets of the slum area. We moved into the bad part of town because we didn't have money. And I remember going through the alleys, holding my dad's hand, and smelling the open sewage. You will have a lot of pity if you saw that image of me. But those were the best years of my childhood. My dad was around a lot. Finally, my dad found a job, a nice one, and we moved out of that area, out of that house, into a nice house, two-bedroom house. And I really missed that old, dirty, smelly studio apartment because I didn't get to sleep next to my parents anymore. I didn't care that we were poor. I didn't know we were poor. There's only a few things, maybe just one thing, that's eternal in this life. And that is love, human share with each other. It's love between father and son. It's love between husband and wife. It's love among friends. It's love in a church congregation. It's love between us and God. Everything else is nonsense, the Bible says. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love. I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, wow, really? Know everything there is to know? And if I have a faith that can move mountains, that sounds like a big deal, but do not have love, I am what? Nothing, really? That doesn't sound like nothing to us. You can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge? That sounds pretty nice. That's nothing without love? If I give all I possess to the poor and give my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Everything is meaningless. Everything is nonsense without love. And this writer describes a little bit of what love looks like in real life. Love is not just a concept. Love comes out in relationships. Look at this. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. And God is love. Amen.